is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Vice President J.D. Vance was in Los Angeles Friday. That's where Marines and National Guard personnel remain in place as protests continue over the immigration raids in Southern California. ABC's Melissa Adan has the latest from Los Angeles.
Protesters now enter their third week of calling for a stop to these raids, and the White House is not backing down. Small protests popped up across Los Angeles in response to the ongoing immigration enforcement raids. This after Vice President J.D. Vance was seen shaking hands and meeting with U.S. Marines deployed in Los Angeles.
It's the second week of the war between Israel and Iran. Israel says it's assassinated three Iranian generals in the last day and that it intercepted 40 Iranian drones overnight. President Trump will meet with his National Security Council as he continues to consider U.S. involvement. Severe weather in North Dakota blamed for at least three deaths in Cass County. This is ABC News. A bankruptcy judge okayed a $7 billion settlement from OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma for people harmed by the opioid epidemic. It's now on to municipalities, survivors, and other stakeholders for their approval. There has been another case of suspected political violence as the mayor of a major city was allegedly targeted for abduction, says ABC's Olivia Rubin.
Police say a man allegedly carrying a taser, gloves, rope, and duct tape in his car is behind bars, charged with attempted kidnapping and stalking Memphis Mayor Paul Young. The suspect, 25-year-old Trenton Abston, appearing in court on Friday where he did not enter a plea. Mayor Young posting about the incident on his Instagram account, saying the suspect jumped a wall in the neighborhood, walked up to his home, and knocked right on the front door. The mayor writing, quote, "In today's climate, none of us can be too careful."
Federal court blocked a Louisiana law that required schools to post the Ten Commandments in classrooms. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Dr. Kristen Lierley joins us now.
Three in four people have no idea that the hospital I work at in northern Minnesota will likely close if this big, beautiful bill passes, as will the hospital in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So it is incumbent upon us to have these conversations with each other, not in a hostile way, but in a genuine way about our values and the things that we deeply care about.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. A new effort is helping Wisconsin farmers protect water quality in their communities. Judith Ruiz Branch has more.
A joint effort is helping Wisconsin farmers protect water quality in their communities by learning more about how to prevent manure and fertilizer spills and runoff. The Nutrient Management Farmer Education Program is a collaboration across six counties in northern Wisconsin with partners from the University of Wisconsin, technical colleges, and the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. It helps farmers properly manage manure and fertilizer applications to optimize crop growth while protecting water sources. Athens dairy farmer Wayne Gajewski says one of the biggest benefits is the collaborative aspect where farmers learn as much from the instructors as they do from each other.
I think it's a win-win. It's good for farmers, it's good for the environment, and it's good for the public in general because farmers are trying to be as efficient as they can and without polluting or doing any harm to the environment.
State law requires farmers to develop and follow nutrient management plans to minimize their environmental impact. Gajewski says the training enables them to create these plans independently, reducing reliance on potentially costly external services. Kirk Langfoss is a conservation analyst with Marathon County. He says the grants allow them to offer incentives to farmers and help cover their tuition.
They can get up to $750 reimbursement on soil testing. They can get payments to do manure testing. They commit to between 8 and 12 hours a year when they come to the class, so it reimburses them for their time.
Agriculture spills have been prevalent across Wisconsin, with one reported last month in Monroe County. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Heat advisories in effect for your Saturday. We'll have a high around 97. The heat index approaching 110 with a strong south wind. For Saturday night, mostly clear, breezy conditions, a low around 78. On your Sunday, sunny, hot, 97.
Right now, it's 80.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison, where I welcome the Green Bay Automobile Gallery's Daryl Burnett. And we rank our all-time favorite summer blockbuster movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Eagle, 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Hey, this is Aaron, Todd's producer. Thank you for joining us for this weekend's edition of the Best of the Todd Albaugh Show. We had some really great shows this week and conversations with a lot of different people. You can check all of that out by going to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Right now, we turn our focus to another part of the university, and joining us in studio, equally as happy and proud and honored to have James Small, the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. James, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me on today.
Well, it's our pleasure. People that listen to the show regularly know I grew up in Richland Center, a town of 5,000 people in southwest Wisconsin. These rural issues are particularly important to me. I had a couple of stints on the City Council, Richland Center, and I actually chaired the Police and Fire Commission, which we worked closely with the EMS directors of Richland County, that sort of thing. And this is something that I think is under-talked about, so I really appreciate the opportunity to have you here to give some light to this. Before we get into that, tell us, as we like to say, a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and how did you get into this?
So I grew up on Washington Island up in northern Door County.
Oh, my God. Did you really?
I'm a graduate of Washington Island High School, which is the smallest public school in Wisconsin.
That is amazing. I've never met anybody who grew up on Washington Island. So did your parents have roles or jobs on the island?
Yep. My dad's an excavating contractor, and he also was on the fire department and was an EMT, or still is an EMT, actually, up there. And my mom was a teacher at the elementary school.
Wow. So let's just pause right there for a second. What was it like growing up there? I've been to Door County. I have never. It's part of my goal this summer is to get to Washington Island. What was it like growing up there?
You know, I think all kids think there's nothing to do, right? That's what I hear from my own kids living outside of Milwaukee. Mm. Oh, there's nothing to do. But I don't think that was really the case there. Yeah. There was always something to do. You have a very strong sense of community there on the island. Everybody's kind of looking out for each other, willing to step up and help each other. So it was just, a very unique environment to grow up there culturally versus growing up in a big city, for instance. The people just have that connection. They just intuitively know that they're connected.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've carried with me through my career now, over 30 years into emergency responding.
That's amazing. What was the population, or is the population of Washington Island, more or less?
In the winter, it's about 700 or so year-round. And then in the summer, that goes up to several thousand with all the summer homes and all the tourism and stuff.
Just a minute, I didn't mean to go down a tangent, but I've never met anybody who grew up there, and I've heard nothing but spectacular things about it from people who have traveled there. So, all right, so you grew up in Washington Island, you graduated from the smallest high school in Wisconsin, and then what?
Well, I started in EMS actually on the island in 1993 while I was still in high school, and then went off to college. I went to Carroll in Waukesha. Got a bachelor's degree there. My bachelor's degree is actually in criminal justice. I started as a pre-med major, found that probably wasn't the right path for me, And at the same time, I was doing additional EMS training and got a paramedic license while I was also working my bachelor's degree. And I made a pivot and worked in law enforcement also for 25 years, left that a couple years ago, and have just kind of made a career out of being an emergency responder. Spent the last 11 years of my career as both a police chief and fire chief, and I did that in two different municipalities here in Wisconsin. Came to the university, July of 22 when we started the EMS outreach program.
So this is a relatively new program within the university then?
Yes, yep. July of 2022 is when we launched.
Wow, that's incredible. And how is it going so far?
Well, there's no lack of work.
I'm not trying to drag you down a political rabbit hole, but, you know, funding, you know, we're going to get more into the funding a little bit, but I mean, the funding for the university in its entirety right now is a hotbed issue. I would hope to goodness that from whatever side of the aisle people are on, that everyone would recognize the importance of the program like this.
Well, our program is 100% federally funded, which has brought some uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I think that's now been resolved. I think from what it sounds like, the funding is secure now going forward for the Office of Rural Health program that exists in every state in the country. As far as in the state, a lot of this, and when we talk about EMS, we need to look back to that this is a function of local government. Mm. First and foremost, this is a service that's provided by the government for the betterment of the community. And at its base level, it's a town, city, or village providing that service in one way or another. Although you do see some counties that are doing countywide systems in Wisconsin. But from a political standpoint, I think this is a really unique space relative to some other issues because it's not really partisan. I haven't had anybody come up and talk about it in a partisan way. There's different ideas on how to fix it, but there's a general consensus that there's a lot of challenges in this space. There's a lot of funding issues in this space, and there's a workforce issue in this space. That's agreed upon. Just how do you get to those solutions varies a little bit, but I think that's more based on personal philosophy than partisanship.
Gives me some hope. That's good to hear that people aren't trying to partisanize this, because in my opinion, it should not be. Help us understand a little bit, because we hear that you're the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. So what is the mission of this relatively new program? Are you training people, giving them basically degrees in EMS and rural EMS, or is this to be advocacy for local government? What's the mission?
Most of my work is done with local government. So our goal of the program is to work on reliability and sustainability of the EMS response system itself. So a lot of that depends on funding from local government. It depends on organizational structure of the systems. We're not doing anything with patient care or system quality at all. There's other excellent training providers to provide that training. That's not something we need to duplicate. But where the gap really existed was to work with these local governments, particularly the small local governments that don't have the resources, to help walk them through that process, whether it's how do you increase funding, how do you maybe take your two volunteer ambulances and push them together and create one full-time ambulance and split the cost between the two communities. A lot of those kind of discussions.
We're talking with James Small, the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. James, when you look at the current state of things across the state, what do you find the biggest challenge? I'll use that word instead of problem. What's the biggest challenge for these municipalities? And the second part of that, what's the cause, in your opinion?
I'm not sure on the cause. I think that we've seen a decline nationwide in the availability of EMS services, particularly with volunteer services, that there's just a decline in availability of volunteers, I think is the best way to say that. I don't think that there's a lack of people wanting to go into it. Our licensing data doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. Our licensing data is pretty consistent going back over a decade that at any given point we have about 18,000 people that have licenses in the state. What we do see when you get into the licensing data is that about 7.5% of them are leaving the field every year and turning in their license. Mm-hmm. And then that's not even counting the people that are going from like one employer to another and so on and some of that attrition. So maintaining a workforce, when you think about that every 12 years we have to train the equivalent of the entire workforce, mm-hmm. that's problematic. And then as we've seen the costs increase, that becomes very challenging, I think, particularly for the small municipalities to make that lift and use the tools that are available to create the finances that are necessary to pay for things, because they may be going from a full-time staff member and mm-hmm. hiring a, you know, or a volunteer staff member to a full-time staff member, which is considerably more expensive. And then we also have like hyperinflation in this space, whether it's on capital equipment, personnel costs are outpacing CPI by 2 to 3 fold going back almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all at once, where a few years ago you might have been hiring a full-timer for $50,000 a year, that position might be 80 or 90 now.
Wow. Is that straight pay by the benefits on top of
and
that?
Benefits then? On right. top of that. And as you know, health insurance is anybody's guess how that goes year to year.
Yeah.
So it's gotten really, really expensive, really, really fast. And, you know, when it was a volunteer system, you know, back in the 80s when a lot of these systems really yeah. came of age, they started in the 70s and kind of gelled in the 80s. There wasn't 911 yet. Mm-hmm. So the amount of, the access of the system had a barrier in it, which 911 is erased. We have 911 across the state of Wisconsin, across most of the country at right. this point. So it's very easy to access the 911 system, but then having that capacity to handle these increases too. Because if you look at some of these systems, you know, if they formed back in the early 70s, they might have done like a dozen calls that first year. Mm-hmm. That same system might be doing like a couple thousand now.
Really?
And you're trying to do it with the same base that you built it off of these volunteers that came in that wanted to come help the community, and they needed a first aid card and a CPR card because right. there wasn't even EMS licensing yet. For now, it's a couple hundred hours of training to get in the door.
Do you see, and I've heard this from other people around the state, do you see an increase of these calls? Yes, partly because of the access to the 911 system, which I think we could all say is a good thing, but also an aging population where it's no longer someone, God forbid, is having a heart attack only. It's somebody fell in the house and their spouse can't help get them up, or they're there alone. And so they call the fire department, or they call the EMS. And a lot of this is just life service calls, is it not?
Yes, and there's been an annually increasing call volume statewide that's been going on for decades now. Mm-hmm. There was just a study done by Department of Health Services looking at what the reasons for an EMS call were, and 1 in 6 EMS calls in Wisconsin is for a fall, like you're describing. Yeah. The other thing that they found during that study is that Wisconsin is number one in fall-related mortality in the United States.
Really?
So we have lots of falls, and we have lots of people that die from falls.
I did not. That's fascinating, disturbing, but fascinating. Hopefully not. There's not too many brand new old fashions in the call. I'm not sure, but I hope that's not the case. But very, very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about this workforce more, because you're obviously much more versed in this than I am. I know a few years back, a good friend of mine, Troy Everson, which was integral in the Viroqua and Vernon County EMS and EMT system. He now does that down in Burlington, Wisconsin. And I know he helped get through a piece of legislation years ago where high school students that were taking courses to be volunteers were allowed to actually help and actually do some of the stuff as long as they were with a licensed person on the team. And that really opened up and not just created more workforce, but also was almost like an apprentice type of training. Have you seen that have an effect?
Yes. You're seeing in a number of different regions around the state, the technical colleges are running what they call a dual enrollment program, mm-hmm. where high school seniors will come in and learn a trade. And one of those programs might be fire and EMS. There's been a high demand for that. I've seen the technical college systems be very successful with that. There's also some high schools that have partnered with other training centers to offer EMT training right in the schools.
Wow.
And La Follette School of Public Policy just did an EMS-related report that came out in the last couple of weeks, and one of their key recommendations was expansion of the high school EMS programs to provide somebody access to a workforce. Because those kids that are going through those programs right now are going to find a job pretty quickly yeah. after coming out of it.
And good paying with good benefits generally.
Yes. Yep. This is going to be a job that probably has a living wage with good mm-hmm. benefits working for a government right out of high school, potentially in some cases.
Yeah.
And then continue on with further training like paramedic training and so on. But it's, I think that's one tool that we need to look at, but just access to training in general. You know, when we did our ambulance reliability study a couple of years ago, one mm-hmm. of the things that we found is about 13% of the services had an hour or more drive to a training center. Well, that's a huge barrier. If you're yeah. depending on volunteers to come in and they're going to work their regular job all day, drive an hour to training, spend 4 hours in training, drive an hour home, and then go back to their job the next day, their real job, and then they're going to do that 50 times. And that's a lot to ask of somebody who wants to come in and volunteer. So finding other access points is going to be, or alternative ways of delivering that training is something we need to do.
More conversation with James Small from Rural EMS Outreach Program at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Set out for a brand new start. He's an island boy. Now he's an island boy. Living his life where stress is the enemy. Now he's an island boy. A stone's thrown from St. Croix. He's finally found his peace of serenity.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 8 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock, the top of the hour news update for you. Come back with What's Worse, a Taco Edition. And then at the bottom of the next hour, State Representative Jody Emerson on the breaking news, the fluid news, the Joint Finance Committee on proposed cuts to the tune of $87 million to UW system, which has been pulled so far from JFC. We'll update you on the bottom of the hour on that. But right now, we are joined, as it turns out, by a real-life island boy, James Small, Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health, not from St. Croix, but rather Wisconsin's own Washington Island. And over the break, James, we're talking maybe we could do a show together from Washington Island later in the year.
I think that would be fun. Maybe we could do it right off the deck on the ferry or something like that.
I am 100% down. So don't toy with me, because I'm down for this. By the way, our own Parker Olson, the producer for Pat Kreitlow's show on the morning, says take Kreitlow's pontoon boat there. Well, Parker, great suggestion. I don't believe the waterways are navigable from Lake Wissota to Washington Island, but maybe, I don't know. We may have to portage at some point. But it's a beautiful place, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, I look forward to that nervous anticipation. That'd be super cool. Let's finish our discussion here, because I'm really, really enjoying this, talking about rural EMS, rural EMTs. We talked a little bit before the break here, James, about the challenges looking at workforce, maybe some of these new high school, I'm going to call them an apprentice program. Maybe that's not the right word, but essentially that's what it is. I think this is fantastic because so many young people today are saying, look, for whatever reason, I can't afford to go into college or maybe even technical school, but here's a program you can get into yet in high school. As you said, potentially get out, have a life-sustaining job, and you're helping the community. One of the things, I want to get your take on this, growing up in Richland Center, my uncle Basil was a volunteer firefighter for years and years and years. His whole family were very involved in the community. I knew people that were, we used to have EMTs and firefighters in our church. You'd go to Sunday morning, they have pagers on, and that pager would, they'd have to leap out of the choir loft or out of the pew to go down. And it seems like we have fewer of those folks in our communities. I guess my argument or my thought is people are some of us are moving away from our communities where we grew up and the aging population. But I also think with other activities, gaming, you know, screens, that we don't celebrate our local EMS volunteer people enough. Does marketing play into this?
I think so. That's actually another key recommendation out of the La Follette study that they did was to look at how we're messaging this and look at some kind of a public information plan on bringing forth what this industry is all about. But I think when you look at the volunteers, everybody's having difficulty finding volunteers. That's a cultural, sociological event that's happened in our country. And I don't know that there's a decline in it. The conventional wisdom says that the increased training standards led to a decline in the number of volunteers. I don't believe that that's the case. I think that what we're seeing is just the same thing the church is seeing in the Lions Club and the Rotary Club and everything else, where you know, even if you have a group of volunteers, you probably have a small handful of people that are doing 80% of the work, and then the other 15 are doing the other 20%, things like that. And we see that really commonly in the EMS systems, particularly the small rural ones, where there's maybe four people doing 80% of the work, and then there, you know, 10 people might fill in the other 20%. Because when you look at running an ambulance, that's 17,520 hours a year that has to be staffed to staff an ambulance 24/7, 365, like it's required. That's a lot.
And many of these rural communities now, or at least some, I should say, are going to private services because they simply don't have the folks locally to volunteer or even pay them, right?
Yep. So that's common to see municipalities close their ambulance service and then contract with another entity. It might be another municipally owned ambulance neighboring them. It might be a private entity that they come in. It's becoming increasingly common too to see the municipalities collaborating and sharing that cost because the cost is so high now. Just running your own ambulance to do 100 calls a year and having to staff it potentially with full-time staff, because you're looking at one ambulance staffed with full-time staff with capital equipment costs and station and stuff, you're probably looking at $1 million a year.
Wow.
You know, and most of these small municipal budgets might be just a few $100,000 in some of these townships. So it's just way beyond their means.
Time has always gone too fast. We'd love to have you back either here or Washington Island, whichever we could work out in a future show. Is there something I have not asked you yet that you want to make sure people across the state know about this program and or anything you want to say about funding, your deal?
I think the biggest thing right now is that if somebody's interested in this career, come into it, come try it, come go take a class. There's all the technical college systems have EMS training centers associated with them. Go down to your local volunteer fire department. Even if EMS isn't for you, maybe the fire department's for you, but find a way to get involved in your community. That's what our small communities have been based on for, you know, centuries at this point, and build that sense of community back. And these departments are really integral in our small communities to building that sense of community. So get out and be part of it.
If people want to find you or the program, is there a website or anything like that you want to give out?
Yep. Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. So it's WORH.org/EMS is our EMS information. My email address directly is small5@wisc.edu. So small5@wisc.edu.
Cool. We'll put those in the show notes, and we've got your contact information, so we can certainly get people in touch with you. We didn't even get to touch on, I would like to do this in a future show, the emergency management directors in these communities, because with climate change and stuff, it seems like more flooding, more things like that, more tornadoes, and those are also integral in our communities.
Yeah, and this, you know, EMS is part of that emergency response framework. So if that isn't there, and you have an ambulance that doesn't respond, that's an important part of these communities.
James Small, growing up in Washington Island, with all your experience in the EMS, you seem the perfect person for this job. You're part of what makes Wisconsin great. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me today.
Our pleasure. Come on back. We'll talk a little what's worse and more of the Joint Finance Committee after this. You're listening to Across Wisconsin. I wish you were on an island on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490 AM. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Vice President J.D. Vance was in Los Angeles Friday. That's where Marines and National Guard personnel remain in place as protests continue over the immigration raids in Southern California. ABC's Melissa Adan has the latest from Los Angeles.
Protesters now enter their third week of calling for a stop to these raids, and the White House is not backing down. Small protests popped up across Los Angeles in response to the ongoing immigration enforcement raids. This after Vice President J.D. Vance was seen shaking hands and meeting with U.S. Marines deployed in Los Angeles.
It's the second week of the war between Israel and Iran. Israel says it's assassinated three Iranian generals in the last day and that it intercepted 40 Iranian drones overnight. President Trump will meet with his National Security Council as he continues to consider U.S. involvement. Severe weather in North Dakota blamed for at least three deaths in Cass County. This is ABC News.
Baseball in the Twin Cities. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game 2 of the Brewers series this weekend against the Twins going on today. Last night, the Brewers win was one for the record books. Milwaukee winning by a final score of 17-6 over Minnesota. 23-year-old Jacob Mizorowski, they call him the Miz, in only his second start in the major leagues, pitched a perfect game, a no-hitter, until the seventh inning when the first hit of the game from the Twins was a two-run homer. Mizorowski asked, did it feel like a special night?
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, coming out and hearing the crowd cheering like that on a road series, it's exciting. It's awesome.
Did you feel any different emotionally or just how you were able to manage the day and your stuff once you were out there?
I think honestly I felt calmer and ready to go compared to the first one. You know, nerves were going pretty heavy on the first one, so it's good to finally feel the feet under you.
Again, the final from last night, 17-6 in favor of the Brewers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Danny Boyle is back with the release of 28 Years Later, his long-awaited third installment to the 28 Days franchise. In a recent article in Variety, the Slumdog Millionaire Oscar-winning director says, due to cultural appropriation, he probably couldn't direct a film like Slumdog Millionaire nowadays, but says he's okay with that and that he would want a young Indian director to have that opportunity to tell the story. What a cool dude. Boyle's other credits include Trainspotting and 127 Hours. Timothy Oliphant is on a roll. The star of Justified has a new show on Apple TV Plus called Lucky, where he stars opposite Anna Taylor-Joy. But Oliphant wasn't done. He still managed to find room in his calendar to join the cast of another Apple show called Stick, alongside Owen Wilson. The Emmy-nominated Oliphant will next be seen in FX's Alien Earth, which drops in August, and he will join a new Peacock show called Five Star Weekend. Cha-ching. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Heat advisories in effect for your Saturday. We'll have a high around 97, the heat index approaching 110 with a strong south wind. For Saturday night, mostly clear, breezy conditions, a low around 78. On your Sunday, sunny, hot, 97.
Right now, it's 82.
Matt and Air on Air.
From articles that I have seen, if you are a bagel purist, you should not toast your bagel. I think nothing's better than a toasted bagel and a schmear.
Folks, can we have a moment of honesty? Do you really like bagels, or do you like the schmear that is transported by them? Get rid of the stigma. If I walk into this room eating cream cheese out of a tub with a spoon.
Why is that wrong?
Matt and Air on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
but why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend news headlines and also State Senator Kelda Royce. Will the Joint Finance Committee actually meet this week? She'll tell us. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 35 minutes now past the hour of 3 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. Glad to have you along. Zomer's on the board. If you have a question for our next guest, feel free to call or text in on the Civic Media app. Call a number. It's 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Sitting here in studio, always glad to have her. As you might have heard last segment, she was kind enough to join us for What's Worse. Going to get a bit more serious now, though. Last time she joined us was at the North Ski Nook up in Osseo, Wisconsin. She is a state representative in the Eau Claire area, beautiful Chippewa Valley. She is Jody Emerson, and she is the ranking member for Democrats on the Assembly Committee on Universities and Colleges. Representative, again, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
It's great to have you here in person. I want to start off with, because this breaking news, we put out something on our socials last night, and many thanks to my sister, who's, I'm not sure she's directly in your district, but she's in the area there in Eau Claire, and let's put that up. Heather, on watching us on Facebook, says, Representative Emerson, thanks for speaking with the Memorial High School Student Dems group this year. My daughter really appreciated your kindness and thoughts. Well, I didn't know that.
Aw, that's sweet.
How about that?
Well,
my sister took my youngest niece, who just graduated this year at Memorial, and took her this last summer when Vice President Harris made that appearance in Eau Claire. And it was my niece was like, well, I don't really know. And then she was kind of like, so-so. And my sister said they got back to the car. And my niece just got kind of emotional and was like, that is so amazing. And to see a woman in that position. And I think it's just really healthy and great to see a female legislator come into these high schools and say, you know what, you can do this too.
Well, I think that's so important. I think we work to achieve what we can see in other people. And so even though somebody might not look just like me, having a woman in that position, we've had men in that position, I think, and that's part of the reason why I do this and why I care about colleges and universities, because we know that that younger generation is so critically important to the health of Wisconsin and to all of us, and we need to inspire it. You know, we all had people who inspired us.
100%.
One way or the other, good or bad sometimes.
Right. Influenced us, yeah. Absolutely.
That, it's great to be in that position, to be able to do that.
My sister updated or let me know, you posted on your Facebook last night about these remarkable changes. I did a little bit of reporting of my own, contacted a couple of the people, the state capitol that still talk to me and other places, and said, no, this is legit, that the Joint Finance Committee, the Budget Writing Committee, we had Senator Kelda Royce on the program yesterday. She's part of that, one of four Democrats on the committee, putting this budget together. They were going to take up the university, I still call it UW system. I know it's...
I will always call it system.
Thank you.
Let's just agree on that one going 100%. Forward today.
And they were going to take up the budget, and you were one of the first people to put this out there, and then we put it on our socials, that they were looking at cutting $87 million. Not from Governor Evers' $300 million-plus proposal on his version of the budget, not from current spending, but $87 million.
Yeah, I mean, so right now we've got one of the biggest asks. UW system had it. Governor Evers put it in his budget, asking for $855 additional million dollars for this year's budget. And what we were hearing rumblings about yesterday is that they were going to actually be cutting $87 million, I think, is what we were hearing. So not even just doing what they did last year, but actually taking money away. And I mean, that just puts a panic through. And I think it's also not only really bad forethought, because the universities are importers of people into our state. We bring people in from Minnesota and Illinois and Iowa and other country, other states. They feel like other countries sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Let's not talk about those Vikings. But, and then some of them stay here, mm-hmm. and they establish their careers and they establish their families here. And when we're looking at being an aging state, mm-hmm. the way that we bring people in is by having family-friendly policies, which includes having really high-quality K-12 schools. Well, you know, we worked on that one in joint finance last week. That didn't come out the way that I would like to see it. And now we're looking at the university system. And if we want to train the teachers of tomorrow, the engineers of tomorrow, the doctors, the nurses, the thinkers of tomorrow to develop the technologies of an industry that doesn't even exist right now, but is maybe going to take over our world in the next 15 years. You know, we need our universities to be strong, and we also need them all over the state too. We cannot just have one central location in Madison. People need to be able to be close to home, because our higher education system isn't just for 18 to 22 year olds anymore. You go back, I think about what college was like when I was there, you know, 1,000 years ago. You know,
I was 1,000 plus. So go ahead.
You know, I went to school in the early 90s in college. We were super excited that we had a quote unquote computer lab in the basement of the dorm. It had 4 computers in there.
Yeah.
And you'd bring in your own little floppy disk that wasn't actually a floppy disk back then. And this is, you know, what they were talking about. Well, you know, now it's, you have to train on AI.
Right.
That didn't exist back then. When I went to school, AI was, you know, the old War Games movie of, would you like to play chess, you know, professor?
Right. Exactly right.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch the movie, because it's hilarious.
We're talking with State Representative Jody Emerson, the ranking member of the Democratic, or the Assembly Committee on Colleges and Universities, about these proposed cuts. $87 million is what it was rumored to be last night. I want to get into that in a minute, Representative, but let's cut to the chase and just update people, because this has been a very fluid situation. So you put it out on your socials. We amplified that. We did some additional reporting. I know other places did as well. And I really credit this to all the Wisconsinites out there that followed up and called people, particularly Joint Finance Committee and their local representative or senator, because we got late word right before we came on the air that Joint Finance Committee, while they were going to meet, and they did, they pulled this motion because they gotten so much pressure and blowback and embarrassment that they pulled it back. And now Shelly Pittman, our great news director here at Civic Media, reports she was up at the Capitol. The Joint Finance Committee now has adjourned for the day and no action. So I think that this is a win for today. Agree or disagree?
I think it's a temporary reprieval. You know, we don't know what they're coming back at. It could be worse.
Right.
It could be better.
Right.
But I think, you know, if we are working to make Wisconsin a better place, we have to have a strong education system here. We have to make sure that our universities are strong. And what is happening on a university campus impacts every single person in this state. There is research that is done into making sure that byproducts of milk, you know, are being used in a way that helps the community, that we're growing better crops, that we are learning better medical research. You know, UW-Madison has got one of the best medical research facilities in the entire nation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some federal implications with that. And I don't know if we've got enough segments to talk about all the federal issues going on with higher education right now.
Right.
But we have to do our part at the state level. And so I know that higher ed can be kind of a hot button political topic. We definitely have seen that in the committee. But I'm hoping that by people reaching out to the joint finance members, they're understanding that these are the nurses in their community. These are the police officers in their community. These are the teachers. These are the people who are designing the roads that we drive on. Mm-hmm. And we have to have a strong four-year system in addition to a strong technical college system.
Agreed.
It's not a either or, it's a both and. And right now, we are funding our public universities 44th in the nation. Used to be 43rd. We slipped.
Yeah.
If we don't, the goal with that $855 million is to maybe get us up into the mid-20s. Mm. You know, we're not looking for the you know, cream of the crop. We're looking at, like, can we just be middle of the road with funding?
I'm so glad you brought up this to not be a partisan issue. Look, I'm a former Republican, as viewers and listeners of this show know, left the party in 2011. I pointed out in our first segment, the first hour of this show, give folks a little history lesson on land-grant universities. It was Abraham Lincoln that signed that legislation nationally into law to make universities less, my words, hoity-toity and ivory tower, to say, let's focus on agriculture. Let's focus on engineering, not just the arts, but also those as well. So the University of Wisconsin system is built literally on land-grant university funds from the federal level. Then it was fighting Bob La Follette, and apologies to Democrats, I know it makes them a little salty, but Bob La Follette was a Republican governor and U.S. senator of this state who fought for the Wisconsin idea that the borders of our university are the borders of our state. And yes, even Tommy George Thompson, when he was governor and also as a graduate of UW Madison, but also as became president of the system, fought and believes in this. So, and of course, there are lots of Democrats as well, but I think for our Republican friends listening, this is not some sort of, I hate using this word, but woke, you know, whatever idea. This is integral to your point, Representative. This is the ag extension to all of our ag producers and 4-H'ers all across this state. This is an economic driver, a job creator, as Speaker Voss likes to say. Your comments.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. You know, they are doing research into Lake Altoona in my district as to why there's so much sediment coming through and why there's so much runoff. Like, there's not a university in Altoona, but Altoona gets the benefits of that because it is the Wisconsin idea. It our universities, our higher ed goes everywhere and impacts everybody in the state. And I mean, you wouldn't find a better champion of the UW system than Tommy Thompson.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, he's amazing when it comes to that. And it's really disappointing. And I think what happens is some of my colleagues in the Capitol will see a situation that happens. And, you know, our universities are run by humans. They're right. Taught by humans.
Right.
You know, there are going to be mistakes there. They'll see one mistake and they will latch onto it and say, for that reason, every department, every campus, everything needs to be defunded.
Yeah, I say there's always a bad apple in the bunch, even radio hosts. A couple minutes left here before we go to break. I think this is a really important point. Talk us through in 2 minutes, if you can, we could come back after the break. If these $87 million of cuts that were scheduled to be voted on today went through, and if Governor Evers would have, whatever reason, sign that into law, what would this mean in real terms to the people of Wisconsin?
I mean, without seeing the actual motion, it's hard to tell because it, you know, it could be this part, that part. But we've put a lot of money into building campuses up, science buildings all over the place. If we have to cut 80 some million dollars, I can just about guarantee that we can say goodbye to all the 2-year campuses.
The 6 that are left.
We will probably be saying goodbye to 1, if not more, of the 4-year campuses. So are we looking at, you know, closing River Falls because it's a smaller school and
Superior?
it's just down the road from, you know, a couple other campuses. Mm-hmm. Well, they're building this huge, beautiful SciTech building right now that is integrating business and agriculture together. Our state has invested money in that. So we need to invest the money in keeping that school properly staffed and everything else. Tuition's going to go up. That's a given, but you know, there's so many other things. I better come back for the next segment because I got a big list here.
She's a pro. She's going to take my job. Come on back. We'll talk a little bit more with State Representative Jody Emerson about these Joint Finance Committee proposed cuts that are on hold for now. We're going to talk about it more on the other side. It's the All Ball Show across Wisconsin for a Tuesday on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, Vitaly's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Yeah, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Ready to Work, where it is 8 minutes before the hour of 4 o'clock on the top of the hour. ABC or CBS News, depending upon which of our great stations you're listening to. A weather update with Brittany Merlot and our great weather team. Looks like maybe a few stronger storms into tomorrow. Otherwise, sultry, hot, sticky at that time of year here in Wisconsin. And then a little sports update from our great sports reporter, Mike Clemens. Brewers have a big series against the Cubs this week. And then the Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon from 2 until 4, followed by Pete Schwabba and Conrad and Nightlight. Always a great way to end your day with Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 6 until 8. Right now, we're joined here at the table in the studio at the World Headquarters in downtown Madison by State Representative Jody Emerson. She is the ranking assembly member on the Assembly Committee on Colleges and Universities, talking about these proposed cuts to the UW system to the tune of $87 million, which was ended, at least for now, when the Joint Finance Committee pulled that motion just a couple of hours ago. Representative, let's talk a little. Again, was there something you wanted to finish up? We were talking that if this $87 million cut were to come to fruition, keyword if, the governor then would have the choice of either having to sign a version There is rumors now that Republicans are using like ChatGPT AI to write this budget. So this is real, so that they don't have to use digits for numerals, but they write them out because the governor isn't able to veto words like that, just numbers. This is really, in my opinion, I don't want to say slimy, but just it's too cute by half, which will put the governor in a really prickly spot. Does he sign this with $87 million? Or does he veto the entire budget? Some Senate Democrats are telling me privately that they would be in favor of a full cut if it came to that, Representative Emerson. What would be your purview?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can't say what the governor should do because he's got a really strong veto.
You can say that.
and he looks at the budget differently than I do. Mm-hmm. I'm not on joint finance. I get one vote up or down on the whole thing.
Yeah.
That vote is becoming clearer and clearer every section that they do. You know, the governor looks at it through the lens of how can I adjust this and make this a little bit better? And we saw some really creative uses of the veto pen in the last budget session. And it's not just Governor Evers. You know, mm-hmm. Tommy Thompson did
sure,
it for 100%. Years. I mean, every...
The Vanna White veto, that right. They passed legislation so he couldn't do that.
Right. You know, and so I've heard Bill McCashin talk about, who used to be Tommy's yes. chief of staff, about how they'd have contests to see how creative of a veto they could find in there.
Don't doubt it a bit.
So, you know, they can't just put this on Democrats.
100% agree.
You know, but... what would happen? It would just be so devastating to our universities. And I'm glad that you brought up AI, because we are at a point a couple of years ago when we were talking AI on the committee, it was more like, okay, let's not get students to write their papers with AI. And how do we train professors to look for AI written stuff? Well, now businesses around the state and around the country are not just wanting, but insisting that their new workers come out trained in AI.
Wow.
And so we're looking at having to add AI into all kinds of things, whether it's medical, to use AI in, I mean, I'm not a medical person, whatever they would use AI for, whether it's to help write things, whether it's to help sort through things. I mean, there's AI implications in every single major that you can do, and companies need that. And so we need to make sure that we've got money in the budget so that the professors can learn how in the course of their course, they can help students learn AI and get ready for life on the outside of school.
And what we clear, this is not just, this is real. What I'm hearing, I haven't seen it, but what I'm hearing is the Republicans are actually trying to use AI technology to feed in all of the laws, what the governor can and can't do with his veto pen, regardless of who it is, and then feed in the current iteration of the state budget and say, write us a veto-proof state budget.
And the irony of that they are using AI, but don't want to give money to the universities to teach people how to use AI. I mean, come on. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And that's part of what is happening at our universities is people who've been out for 10, 15, 20 or, you know, 1,000 years like you and I have been, you know, go back to school sometimes to upskill. Right. To learn this new thing that is coming out. That's part of what our universities are doing, too. There's also a huge amount of dual enrollment where we've got high school students taking college courses, whether virtually or in person, because they can't get that same credit at their school. So we're not just talking 18 to 22-year-olds. We've got to make sure that we're actually putting the money where our mouth is on this.
Agreed. Time always goes too fast. About a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. I want to make sure we get this out. My understanding is that Joint Finance Committee needs to take up the university budget within the week.
It could either be Thursday of this week or it could be next Tuesday. So, you know, they still have to vote on what's going on. They still need to create their motions for what's going on. And so keep the pressure on.
I was going to say, any rumors to that you can report or talk about right now of like it reverses $87 million, make it worse, make it better?
Who knows? So, I mean, like always, civic media listeners, call your representatives, call the people on joint finance, tell them what is critical for us to make a Wisconsin that works for you.
I know our colleague, Pat Kreitlow is watching. He's all set for the Washington Island trip that you've agreed to go on.
All right,
with,
let's do
with
it.
James Small.
Pontoon with
pontoon
Pat.
Pontoon in Lake Wissota. Pat's always on top of these issues as well. People can tune into Mornings of Pat Kreitlow from 6 until 9 as we continue to follow this. Representative Emerson, I cannot thank you enough for being on top of this, for helping disseminate honest, accurate, truthful information, and for helping citizens of the state to join together, because at least for today, let's celebrate a win. win for right now at 358. The Wisconsin idea is still saved for now, but to your point, got to stay on top of this.
It is. It is. So thank you for helping with this. Happy to come on anytime. You're just down the block from the office.
That's what's cool. We love it when you're on the show. Thank you so much, and thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. State Representative Jody Emerson, thanks to her. Also to James Small of Rural EMS Outreach Program at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. To Zommers for doing a great job on the board. And for Pat Kreitlow for being the great captain there on Lake Wissota and also a great radio show host.
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as Todd always says, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you on Monday.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump will meet today with his National Security Council as he weighs whether the U.S. should become involved in the Israel-Iran war. That fighting is now into its second week. Iran says more than 400 people have been killed. ABC's Marcus Moore says Israel also feeling the impacts. He's in Tel Aviv.
The air raid siren sounded again in the middle of the night here in Tel Aviv. Iran launching another wave of 5 missiles and drones. There were no direct hits as Israel's air defense system intercepted all of the missiles, but shrapnel did fall on a two-story building and it caused a fire in northern Israel. Also shrapnel causing damage south of Tel Aviv, but no injuries reported.
Third week of protests over immigration raids in Southern California as Vice President Vance traveled to the area Friday. He greeted military personnel as a federal judge questions whether their presence is legal. And severe weather in the plains blamed for 3 deaths in North Dakota. This is ABC News. After more than 3 months.